You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a fresh episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790, and this is the show where we give you the inside scoop on everything in the world going on with your favorite basketball team. And well, this week it really is everything in the world since the Rockets are in China. Anyway, today's Locked On Rockets is brought to you courtesy of SeatGeek. They're our official sponsor, and if you download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, you can use the promo code LORockets, and that will get you a $20 rebate off of your first purchase. So today's show is going to be a little unique. We're going to do a crossover episode with the Almighty Balling Podcast. It's hosted by Chris Axman. He is found on Twitter at Almighty Ballin. He does a great job with that Almighty Baller podcast. Also has a website, almightyballer.com. Does a lot of great future work around the NBA. But one of the things that really stood out to me of his work, I've talked about it on this show before, was that feature story he did in August called KJ McDaniels, A Draymond in the Rough. And when he says a Draymond in the Rough, of course he's referring to Draymond Green, not saying they're exactly the same player, but he's pointing out that, you know, there are some overlapping skills and just how Draymond is a unique, freakish athlete that, even though he doesn't fit the traditional mold of a forward in the NBA, the things he's good at, he's so good at that it makes him elite. He feels that many of those same things apply to KJ McDaniels. Great column, KJ, A Draymond in the Rough. You can just Google that and find it pretty easily. But I've been wanting to get his take on that, and also his take about the Rockets as a whole, because if you follow him on Twitter at Almighty Ballin, Chris Axman, he is very optimistic about the Rockets. Really, ever since Mike D'Antoni was hired, he's pretty bullish about the moves they've made, how these players fit in Mike D'Antoni's system. So we're going to have a good crossover show with his podcast talking about, A, why he's optimistic on KJ, but B, why he's optimistic about the Rockets as a whole. So we'll start with KJ, get into a little bit of a season preview as well, I would suspect. Before we get to Chris, I want to take care of a few house items, I would say, just update everyone on exactly what's going on with the Rockets this week. Of course, as we tape this Tuesday night, the most recent game was Sunday morning, 123-117 win over the Pelicans in China. If you haven't seen the game or want to hear more, we did have a post-game podcast, myself and Ali Bajani, a.k.a. Rockets Insider on Twitter, talking about what we learned from that. Yesterday, I had a show looking at the recent Sergio Yule rumors, started by Mark Stein of ESPN, who says the Rockets are hopeful to bring him over. If you haven't heard that podcast, you can tune into that episode of Locked On Rockets and hear my breakdown on everything related to Yule and whether it's realistic for him to be a Rocket this coming season. And tomorrow, of course, there's finally another game. Rockets play the Pelicans again tomorrow morning. Then they get on a 15-plus hour flight back to Houston. Once that game ends, I will have a typical post-game show for you breaking down what we learned. I should also have a column going up in the next day or two at sports790.com with my primary takeaways from both preseason game four, as well as what we've learned from all the preseason games thus far and why people are seemingly becoming much more optimistic about this Rockets team based on what we've seen and their undefeated run in the preseason to this point. And, well, not just undefeated run, NBA.com has them with the highest overall net rating in the entire league, and that includes with offense and defense. They have looked very good to this point. So I've got a column coming up in a couple of days at sports790.com. You guys can look forward to that. As far as the game tomorrow, I know some of you may not listen to the podcast till after it, but for those of you listening in advance of the game, things I'm going to be looking for in the rematch with the Pelicans. Hope that James Harden has better legs. Certainly his traditional numbers Sunday, 26 and 15 were good. He also had 8 turnovers. My main thing with James on Sunday, and I said this in the postgame show, I thought it was pretty clear that his legs weren't all there. He shot 6 of 18 from the field. He didn't drive that much. A lot of the threes were short. Defense was spotty at times, and I'm not too hard on him because I think his effort waned on both offense and defense. And I don't think he was dogging it. I think when you go to China and you're playing a game at 6:30 a.m., that's what his body is telling him. It's difficult. Every player, it's just what happens. It's why you don't play real games halfway around the world. It's just too difficult to adjust, especially on short notice. Now, James has been there 3 more days, so hopefully you'll see him a little more active. And if he's more active, then I think you'll see those turnovers go down. I think a lot of those 8 turnovers he had were because he wasn't driving or pushing the defense the way he usually does. He was doing a lot of passing from the perimeter. If he has the energy to attack the rim, I think you'll see a much more efficient James Harden. He should still have a lot of assists regardless, but if he has usual energy, I think he'll shoot better than 33%, and I also think he'll greatly cut down on the turnovers. Everything else, you want to see good play from Corey Brewer and KJ McDaniels. KJ had 11 points and 8 rebounds, 2 blocks in just 20 minutes on Sunday. That was outstanding. Great off-ball defender. On-ball defense still needs some work, but hopefully you continue to see good signs from him. We'll talk more about him with Chris Axman in just a few moments. Everything else, the battle at center, that's still up in the air between Nene and Clint Capella. I think people want Capella to win the role. My reservation about Clint, as I said before, the free throws. He shot 37% last year. He's now 0 of 8 in the preseason entering game 4. That's a little concerning. Now, the Rockets aren't overly worried about it. When he went down to the D-League in his rookie year, he shot almost 60% from the line. He's got good form. All logic tells you that Clint is eventually going to figure it out as long as he gets the necessary repetitions, and that it's probably just a little bit of a mental funk for him right now, and somewhat of a small sample size. He's really only been an NBA player 1 year. But until he does that, I do think the Rockets are going to have reservations about throwing him into certain lineups, especially if it's a really close game late. Because you know what? Mike D'Antoni's teams, they're going to need to score a lot of points to win. Score well above average points. And we saw Dwight Howard and Josh Smith, when they were shooting in the 30% free throw range, which they were for big stretches of last season, they were not playable, because teams would just hack them, and it was impossible to play those lineups. So until Capella starts shooting better on free throws, there's going to be reservations, and Nene is playing well enough offensively. He's shooting, 70% from the field, really efficient, good passer. It's a good option. I think Nene, right now, they're balancing it between Capella starting the first half, Nene starting the second. Other starters are pretty constant, but Nene's got a leg up until Capella makes those free throws. I do think that's a thing. And, you know, you're always going to be walking a fine line because you don't want to bench Capella to where he loses confidence even more. But it's something to watch. I would love nothing more to see Capella go out there and have, you know, a 4-for-4, 5-for-5 game from the line. It would make me feel a lot better. But it is something to watch. Other things, power forward depth. Monty Unis still not with the Rockets. So, really, they don't have a backup power forward. They've been doing a decent bit of small ball with KJ McDaniels because of his length. We also saw a little bit of Montrezl Harrell on Sunday. And, you know, in general, his defense has still looked below average. But he's made a few plays. He made the game ceiling play when he stripped Buddy Hield and took it the length of the floor to secure the game. But the thing that's interesting to me about Montrez, until Monty Unis gets in camp, Montrezl Harrell is your only other true power forward body after Ryan Anderson. So if Harrell can prove worthy of minutes, that would definitely make you feel a lot better about Monty Unis' absence. It's the preseason. I'm sure he's going to get an opportunity to play. Hopefully he takes advantage of that. Last thing I'd be looking for, defense against the point guard position. That's something that lacked a lot on Sunday. Neither James Harden or Eric Gordon can really defend point guards on defense. They just don't have the lateral quickness. They're shooting guards, at least in terms of their bodies. Harden's a point guard on offense. He's not on defense. And so I think that's where the Rockets struggled at times defensively on Sunday, giving up 117 points because the likes of Tim Frazier were just able to get in the lane and collapse the D. Now, Pat Beverly is not going to be back tomorrow either, but maybe you can try some different things. Maybe Harden's a better defender if he has his legs under him. Maybe Corey Brewer spends some time picking up the point. But that's what you want to see. I thought the Pelicans penetrators had a little bit too much free reign in that game on Sunday morning, and hopefully you see a better result on Wednesday against the same opponent, albeit in Beijing rather than Shanghai. And after the game ends, we'll have a full post-game recap. Then, of course, Rockets travel back to Houston, resume preseason play at Toyota Center on Saturday night against the Memphis Grizzlies. That's the last preseason home game, and I will be there. Also have a post-game show for you after that as well. So that's what you have to look forward to the rest of the week. Momentarily, I'm going to get to Chris Axman on the other side to talk about his KJ McDaniels piece as well as his outlook for the team as a whole. Great NBA analyst. But before we get there, I want to throw a shout out to our sponsors at SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a tremendous resource for sports fans because really buying tickets online for major sporting events, it's been confusing for quite a while. It's hard to find the best deal for the right game, and many of the older sites, they use the confusion to their advantage. They don't want to change it. But SeatGeek, it's different. They've come along, they've created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. I use it myself. It's great. Got tickets a couple weeks ago for the U of H Louisville game in November, although, well, with U of H losing to Navy, now the value of that's gone down a little bit. But still be two ranked teams, still be a good game. Anyway, happy with SeatGeek. Great sponsor. And again, great app because everything about it is designed to make life easier for you, the sports fans. They do all sorts of price comparisons, they search multiple ticket sites, and they really want to ensure that you get the best possible deal. They grade every ticket from 1 to 100, with 100 being the best deal, so you can pretty easily find any underpriced seats and fit them to your budget. Now here's the important part. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, here's what you do. Download that SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. It could be especially useful if you want to go to that preseason game on Saturday night against the Memphis Grizzlies. If you're in Houston, preseason games, they're really a lot of fun. You see a lot of young players. It's a good environment. A lot of true fans are there because a lot of the corporate environment doesn't care to come out for a preseason game. They wait until the regular season. So you can get cheap tickets. People sell their tickets for below face value, and you can go out and see a really fun Rockets team that has yet to lose in the preseason. So if you're in Houston, it's a Saturday night. Let's go out. Let's pack the Toyota Center. Let's give the Rockets a fun welcome home and a welcoming environment at Toyota Center as they take on the Memphis Grizzlies. And if you want to get tickets, the SeatGeek app is definitely one way with the promo code LORockets that you can do that. With that said, I'm not going to delay any longer. I'm going to go to our crossover show right now and let you guys hear from Chris Axman.
Hey, Ben, what's going on?
Hey, Chris, how are you, buddy?
You know, I'm learning what it's like to work through being sick, and, you know, it's one of those great lessons every podcaster needs to learn, though.
Yeah, you got to play injured. I'm learning how to deal with some things, too. I'm learning how to deal with a schedule with an NBA team playing overseas. Having games that start at 6:30 in the morning, that's definitely a new thing to get used to. Thankfully, after tomorrow, we won't have to do that anymore. But, yeah, the post-game recap podcast at 9 a.m., that's something I haven't done before. So, yeah, that's a new challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you signed up for Locked On China, but...
No.
You know, the Rockets are China's team, so...
Yeah. Yeah, the crowds they've gotten have been pretty nuts, but yeah, I think I'm glad to have them back on Central Time Zone, all that stuff, for the remainder of the preseason after tomorrow's game.
Yeah, definitely. I think when we first started talking on Twitter, I had just listened to your episode where you had talked a little bit about how Mike D'Antoni had been using KJ McDaniels early on, and I... link to you an article because I've been listening to your podcast. You're doing a great job. The whole Locked On Network is great, but you know, you in particular, I must know, are astute. And one of the things I really agreed with you, and in fact, maybe not predicted, but outlined a course for Mike D'Antoni to pursue, is how to utilize KJ McDaniels to compensate for some of the shortcomings defensively and otherwise of, you know, some of their better players. But anyways, do you want to go into detail about a little bit of that, and then, you know, we can elaborate from that point, or where did you want to start with this?
Yeah, sure. I'll note for my listeners, I've tweeted it out a couple of times, but Chris wrote a great column. Of course, Chris is at Almighty Baller on Twitter, but you had a great column, KJ McDaniels, a Draymond in the rough. Love that headline, but basically making me... analogy of KJ as a potential impact NBA player, regardless of whether his three-point shot comes around or not, just based on his unique athleticism, defensive versatility. And the reason you invoke the name Draymond Green is because, you know, not saying that KJ and Draymond are the same player, but they have some of the same, you would say, uniqueness. And as far as my outlook on him with the Rockets, it's a much better system for him with Mike D'Antoni. The Rockets, of course, acquired KJ at the 2015 trade deadline. A lot of people really pumped on him because of the, you know, athletic burst we saw in Philadelphia. Just these superhuman dunks and these plays that were out of this world. But he struggled to find a role those first couple of years with Kevin McHale and J.B. Bickerstaff. Systems that were a little slower. And then the bigger thing that happened last year, it wasn't just the system, but the Rockets were kind of trapped in what I would call desperation mode.
Yeah, exactly.
For all of last year, the expectations were for them to contend for a title. They obviously woefully underachieved, ended up being a 500 record, 8 seed. And what you saw because of this, they didn't take many risks. Everything they did was based on trying to, you know, recapture the magic they had the year before when they won 56 games, were the 2 seed, went to the Western Conference Finals. And, you know, everything was just desperation mode, playing the same players. I'll also note that J.B. Bickerstaff, as an interim coach, he didn't want to take any chances, so he tended to err on the side of veterans. Basically, last year with the Rockets, every game felt like it was desperation time because they had to win that game. There was just so much pressure. And so when they hired Mike D'Antoni, it was kind of admitting, okay, we need to take a step back. And so I think the Rockets, certainly they hope to be a good team this year. And they, you know, I'd say they should definitely at the very bare minimum be a playoff team. But there's not these expectations. They're not the Golden State Warriors. They're not the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't think anyone has a delusion of the Rockets contending for a title. So I think you're going to see under Mike D'Antoni, the Rockets be much more willing to take a step back. And rather than just try and fit into, you know, bring back the 2015 Western Conference Finals team, you know, look at things from a more open mind and say, what can we learn about this roster? And with KJ McDaniels, this is a guy, he doesn't fit into the 2015 mold, but he's a very intriguing player with a great skill set. And then you combine that, you know, his athleticism with the up-tempo system that Mike D'Antoni is known for, and there's definitely a lot of possibilities there.
Well, and, you know, you hit on a whole bunch of really good points there. I guess first, it does seem like Bickerstaff last year as interim head coach for this team. I think, and this might be psychoanalyzing in a place where that's not fair, but I think that perhaps, you know, he is the son of a noted head coach, and I think perhaps he was prioritizing respectability over over ceiling. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I think that his decision to not experiment with lineups, to not move beyond, as you said, veterans, but also move beyond, you know, sort of an outdated mentality. There were points last season that they were starting Capella next to Howard. That's something that D'Antoni would never have done, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a big part of that is perhaps he was a little too concerned about criticism, or maybe not. I don't know. We'll have to see where his career goes from here. Is he still an assistant coach? That's sort of off track, but is he still working for the Rockets, Bickerstaff?
No, he's not with the Rockets. Who did he get? Who did he get a job with? He got a top assistant, I believe, in Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis. Yeah, yeah, that's right. And then also, so from there, you know, you said that KJ McDaniels maybe doesn't work well in 2016 in the NBA, but I think if you're looking at him from the model of a shooting guard, he just frankly doesn't work in the NBA ever at any point because the position is shooting guard and he's not a great shooter. But in a positionless NBA, he's a guy who's incredibly athletic. He's 6'7", which just means that he's just tall enough that if he wants to rebound over bigs, he can pull it off with his long wingspan. And he is this really this really interesting new form of rim protector that I think we're seeing a lot more nowadays, where it's not like the Shaq type of I'm going to be a refrigerator in your way type of rim protector, but a Serge Ibaka or KJ McDaniels, I'm going to come out of nowhere and swat your shot type of rim protector, and that's going to be valuable.
Yeah, his ability to rotate and move, it's already been pretty big because right now in the preseason, really, the Rockets don't have a backup power forward. They've been playing a lot of small ball. Now, long term, they hope that Donatas Moniunis is the backup power forward. But as I'm sure you know, he's been in this weird restricted free agent drama. There's still no contract, no end in sight. So right now, the Rockets start Ryan Anderson at the four. And after, there's not really a true backup power forward. They have Montrezl Harrell, but Harrell pretty lacking defensively. What they've done most of the preseason is, go to smaller ball lineups with the likes of KJ McDaniels and Corey Brewer off the bench. And McDaniels' ability to, you know, rotate over and reject shots with his wingspan, it's pretty useful. And I thought you hit the nail right on the head on a couple of items. First, as you said with Bickerstaff, yeah, you know, it was less of a ceiling, but to him it was a higher floor. And so I think for JB, it was just about survival mode, you know, get to the playoffs and hope that, you know, maybe when you get there, you can turn it on. But going to this season's team, the issue with KJ, he gives you on both ends of the floor what I would call off-script plays. And that's a big deal for the Rockets, because when you look at the Rockets compared to other, you know, really good teams, truly elite teams, the Warriors, the Cavs, maybe the Spurs, where the Rockets fall short is, as brilliant as James Harden is, and he might be a potential MVP this year, he's only one guy. Whereas, you know, you're looking at teams with Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, LeBron, Kyrie. The Rockets only have one player that you would point to and say, you know what, he can make anything happen. So because of that, there is a tendency for the Rockets' offense to get predictable at times.
Right.
Even with Harden on the floor, and especially the minute that he's not out. So one of the ways you can avert that is what I call off-plays, something outside the usual box or flow of the offense. And this preseason, McDaniels has been so good at that, Chris. He's been so good at, you know, he's had a good chemistry with Harden, but making that back cut for the alley-oop jam. Or it's as simple as, you know, somebody throws up a three and misses, but McDaniels is so smart and so athletic, he reads exactly where it's going to come off, goes flying in, and in one motion gets the offensive putback dunk. And so to me, yeah, I just call those off-script plays. And that's really useful for a team that only has, you know, one truly elite offensive option in James Harden, which is where the Rockets are right now.
Well, and, you know, it's not even so much that they only have one elite offensive option. It's that they only have one, and maybe this is a downside of the whole D'Antoni system, but they have one elite offensive creator. And,
yeah,
you know, maybe a few years down the line, you can see Capella being able to extend his game to do some of the stuff that Amari Stoudemire could ultimately do by the end of D'Antoni's Phoenix Suns. But, I mean, going into next year, that's just not possible. And what is going to be interesting for me to see is what players can you put in a lineup alongside Harden who can get that initial pass from Harden and not always necessarily take the shot, who can create something further from that. Because I think that the Rockets are going to have a propensity to, you know, Harden will create a good shot, and if they always take that good shot, it means they won't get great shots. And I think that's going to be important for the Rockets next year.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the real key is going to be if Eric Gordon, knock on wood, can stay healthy. He, to me, is the one guy, the first guy they've had since Chandler Parsons, that can actually do some things off the dribble besides just shoot. You know, so many of the last 2 years, Pat Beverly, Trevor Ariza, those are your prototype 3-and-D guys. Even the ones you bring in off the bench, well, you wouldn't call Corey Brewer a three-point shooter, but he's not really a creator with the ball in his hand either. That's where they've been deficient. The last time the Rockets had a truly good offense was that the first year with Dwight Howard there, but more important than having the first year Dwight Howard, it was before they lost Chandler Parsons. And so Parsons, right, as your secondary option to James Harden, also had Jeremy Lin. But those were two guys, Parsons and Lin, that were not just standstill shooters. They were secondary options that could slice the defense and do some things besides just floor spacing. And so it's early in the preseason, but that's what you like about Eric Gordon and also to a lesser extent KJ McDaniels. They have the ability to do things besides just be stationary three-point shooters and space the floor, because you're right, at some point, even, you know, even as great as Harden is, that offense is going to get predictable. And there are ways, especially in today's super athletic NBA, that you can defend that. You need guys that can't just shoot, but that can, you know, fake the shot and do something else. And so far, that's something that both McDaniels and Eric Gordon have been pretty good at this preseason. And not just good at, I should also mention that Harden seems to have really good chemistry with both. One of the things that I've really enjoyed watching, and again, we're 3 games into the preseason, it's very premature, but I have seen Harden having a lot more fun this year than I have in quite a while. And I think that what we just talked about plays a lot into that, in that, you know, he has good chemistry with these guys like KJ, like Eric Gordon, that can truly relieve some of the pressure. It's not just about making a shot. It's about relieving that playmaking pressure. And that's what we're seeing early on with this new look Rockets roster.
Yeah, and you know that fun component of it to me, I've thought about this, and I'm not sure you've ever thought about this, and perhaps it's a little off topic, but I've thought about this idea that, you know, the post game is sort of dying, and the best way that offensively a big man can be dominant is through the pick and roll. And last year, Dwight Howard, I think, you know, he was told stop doing this post-up game, and I think part of the reason might be because it's just, you would get the ball to Dwight Howard, you know, the year before last, so not last year, they sort of limited his post touches this year, but Dwight Howard would get the ball, you know, sort of back up his guy for like 6 or 7 seconds and put up some weird-looking hook shot and get fouled and then miss both his free throws, and that is just so terrible to watch. Like, and I know a lot of people have had problems aesthetically with watching the Rockets because it's like, oh, they always go to the free throw line and they're, you know, so interminable to watch. And I feel like that applies to the players as well as it does to the fans, because I just think that, you know, with if Dwight Howard wants to play a back-to-the-basket game like that and James Harden wants to be the ISO threat that he is, there's going to be way too much ball stoppage, and numbers 3 through 5 on the court at any given time won't want to be there. And Dwight Howard just wasn't up to the task. Like, I'm not sure he was ever up to the task, but certainly at this point in his career, he wasn't.
Yeah. Well, what I think happened with Dwight Howard, as you said, he was never an elite post option, but there was a point in his career in which he was at least average as an offensive post guy because he was so explosive. He never had great post moves, but because he could jump out of the rim so well, you know, he was at least average, if not a little bit above average, on his post touches. And we saw a little bit of that his first year in Houston. What happened the last couple of years, you know, he went into Houston, he had the back surgery before his really awkward year with the LA Lakers. And in his second year with Houston, he began having knee problems. Cartilage broke down. At one point, they called it bone on bone. But it wasn't just, you know, his reduced athleticism from the back surgery. Now that was combined with knee problems. And by his second and third year in Houston, it was, you know, that average had gone substantially below average in terms of his post ability because he no longer had the athleticism that he once had. And it was just, you know, Dwight still got that pride because he's a good NBA player. And every player that's good in the NBA, they have confidence. And he thinks he can work his way out of it. And, you know, that's part of what made him great. But what sucks now is, you know, it's hard for him to accept. But as fans, as analysts, we can look at him and say, you know what, it's hard to see it coming back because, you know, the only thing that kept him viable as a post option was that athleticism. Now it's gone. And what you're left with are just, you know, below average post moves and poor touch. And the one area I would disagree with you on, I wouldn't say his post touches went away last year. He still got them. If you look at the post data, what changed, his shot attempts went down, and the reason being his free throw percentage got so low that, you know, basically the last 4 months of last year he shot in the 30s, and it got to a point where every time that the ball even found him in the post, he got fouled. So yeah, the touches didn't go away. It's just the free throw shooting was so bad that it just became a non-starter that he couldn't even get a shot up without getting fouled. And more often than not, he missed both free throws, as you said. But to get back to your main point, which is, you know, why Harden might be even more engaged this year, one of the great tweets from the preseason, I'm going to read this to you. This was from one of the home games last week. A guy who covers the Rio Grande Valley Vipers mentioned Rockets offense is worlds different considering all the space it now has. Harden's pick and roll pocket pass is going to be there all day this year. And then MK Bauer, he's a writer for the Sports Exchange here in Houston, his response was an offense unencumbered by the post touches of appeasement. And everybody on Rockets Twitter knew exactly what that meant, which was to keep Dwight at all engaged, to keep him at all happy. And you know what? No matter what, he's getting paid a lot of money. He's on all the billboards. You do want to keep him somewhat happy. You had to waste possessions by giving Dwight that obligatory touch in the post. And I agree, that trickle-down effect, when it doesn't work, it affects James Harden's engagement. It affects the engagement of every other player on the team, because in a way, you know, you're kind of, it's like me or you. You know, if somebody tells you to do something that's inefficient, you're going to roll your eyes, and somewhere along the line, it's going to affect your attitude, your overall effort. So I think that the Rockets aren't going to be wasting possessions just to keep somebody happy. Then, yeah, you could see a more engaged James Harden. You could see a more engaged overall roster just based on having a smarter, more efficient offense, which they showed under Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah, and, you know, you introduced that idea with the topic of that article. I think you said it was, you know, that their pick-and-roll game is going to be deadly, something to that extent. And it also opens up the possibility for a expanded pick and roll game, because even though we were just talking about looking for secondary and tertiary options in the Rockets offense, that aside, one way of doing something a little bit creative that I've seen D'Antoni do in the past is run pick and rolls with a ball handler and then not the center, but run pick and rolls with a ball handler and a small forward, or a ball handler and a power forward, or, you know, James Harden and KJ McDaniels, which is one thing I touched on. And, you know, I figure we're going to see, you know, screeners screening screeners between Gordon and Harden as well. And I think that, you know, one great thing, one reason why D'Antoni is such a great fit with this Rockets team is that, you're right, I think they've really missed Chandler Parsons and, you know, to a lesser extent, Jeremy Lin's offensive creation, you know, so that they would have an option that was beyond James Harden. But D'Antoni, if there's a will on offense, there's a way on offense. And, if there's a creator in this bunch that can get anywhere close to James Harden's production that he can pair alongside Harden on the court at any given time, D'Antoni's going to find it, and it'll be really interesting to me to see what that is, because I've got a few things in mind.
One thing they did earlier this week in the preseason that caught my eye, they ran a couple of pick and rolls with Trevor Ariza and Clint Capela, and it actually worked. And, you know, it's one of those things that's unorthodox, because you don't think of Trevor Ariza as a ball handler. However, he's a high IQ player, certainly has a good court sense about him. And you could tell it caught the defense off guard, because that's not the traditional Harden pick and roll that you scout for and you say, okay, this is how we're going to defend it. You know, it's a matter of even using traditional guys like Trevor Ariza in different ways. That's one of the things that Mike D'Antoni is really innovative with. And, you know, incredibly small sample, but I was encouraged by what I saw.
Yeah, and I mean, it is worth mentioning that, though, to a lot of coaches, if they were given a roster with Leandro Barbosa and Steve Nash, they would stagger them like D'Antoni ultimately did. But I think a lot more than people maybe remember or expected, D'Antoni ran lineups with Leandro Barbosa and Steve Nash where they would really, really slice up the court and just like run almost like two separate things at any given time and just pass it off and see what happens, and just sort of let some of their more intelligent guys like Trevor Ariza and then some of their more dynamic guys like KJ or like Eric Gordon, and just see what happens. So the Leandro to Steve Nash comparison there for this Rockets team would be, I think for the most part, Gordon and Harden are probably going to be staggered. That's my impression. And it would be, I'm like asking you, you know, to elaborate further on that, but that's my impression. But I think also D'Antoni is going to use certain minutes in the game to have both of them out there and really just try to blow the other team out of the water during those minutes.
Yeah, one of the things that stood out to me in the preseason, now, Pat Beverly's missed a couple of games with a sore knee, nothing structural, nothing major. I'm pretty sure he's completely fine. But yeah, I think you'll see Harden and Gordon staggered a little bit for that reason, and because defensively, you want Pat Beverly out there so that he can guard the opposing team's point. Because James Harden and Eric Gordon each at least have flashes of being capable on ball defenders. I mean, Harden's known for his lapses, but actually on the ball, he can be decent to good at times.
You've talked about him defending power forwards.
Yeah, he's a pretty decent defender on the ball. The one exception to that is neither Gordon or Harden is quick enough to guard opposing point guards. So I think you do need to stagger them both for offensive creativity reasons and because defensively, you know, you want to have Pat Beverly out there. There's a big role for him to play, you know, 30 minutes a game at least because you need his defense against those quick probing point guards because, you know, neither Harden nor Gordon, you're going to be asking them to expend way too much energy if you're telling them to check the Russell Westbrooks of the world, that kind of thing. So that's part of the equation. The other thing, don't be surprised if you see Gordon, Harden, and Beverly all playing because Mike D'Antoni is not afraid of playing small. So I think a lot of times down the stretch of games, especially if you know both Gordon and Beverly are shooting well. Last year, Beverly shot 40% from three. You know Gordon's an elite shooter. I think you can see a lot of three-guard lineups down the stretch of games because of the shooting and the creativity that D'Antoni wants out there.
You know, and I also think that's true because if you're playing switch heavy on defense, you know, you said that James Harden, you know, is too athletically limited to play defense against point guards. And I think, too, if you say to James Harden, like, lock down, you know, John Wall, that's going to be a real problem. It's a little bit more feasible if you have a lineup like that that you just discussed with PBev, with Harden, with Gordon, maybe Trevor Ariza and Clint Capella. If you're switching everything, you can just stay in front of your man by just saying, okay, like we're going to move this rotation to the right or to the left and work on a string. And I think that that's, you know, a lot more realistic for both both Harden and Gordon in terms of, you know, can we cover some of the quicker players in the league?
Yeah, and I'd also even throw KJ McDaniels into that mix to go back to what we were saying earlier because his ability to switch, his ability to provide some unique things like shot blocking, even in a shooting guard's body, that's pretty useful if you go small and you play with the kind of tempo that Mike D'Antoni wants to play with. You know, he did a lot of those things. I'm certainly not going to compare KJ to Sean Marion, but
yes,
Sean Marion,
do it. Compare
him to the hybrid models. Yep.
I mean, KJ, you would hope KJ's best option or best future, you know, if we look into our crystal balls and look at KJ McDaniels when he's 27, the best possible world for him is that he's averaging like 11 rebounds and a couple blocks and a couple steals. And like, really, even if KJ McDaniels ends up being a star, he should probably never average more than like 20 points. And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be a star. I'm just saying that at least his prototype can be compared to Sean Marion. So I like that comparison, I think, a little bit more than most. But maybe I'm a little too willing to be bold with the comparison. So I'm not comparing skill so much as skill set.
Yeah, and potential role because they're in that same system of Mike D'Antoni's. And, you know, I remember after the first game, Rockets played the Shanghai Sharks. And, of course, you know, a Chinese team is going to be overmatched. But a lot of people said, you know, he had several really impressive backdoor cuts for alley-oops and offensive rebounds and said, well, those back cuts are going to dry up when they play NBA opponents. And you know what? They didn't. Because when you had a system like D'Antoni's with so much motion and so many shooters and so many options, there are going to be lanes away from the ball. You just need someone with the, you know, willingness to play off the ball and the IQ to know when to, you know, make those moves. And that's what Sean Marion did. And you know, you see some of that in McDaniels. Now, it's, you know, it's a long way to go between seeing some of these traits and then, you know, being a true, you know, 18 and 10 type player. But you can at least see the raw skill set that at least has the Rockets intrigued at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've talked to a couple of people who were maybe this is their first year where they're off the KJ McDaniels train. And I've, you know, sort of been poking them with the stick in the ribs, being like, hey, look, this preseason thing, it's going to work out. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, when Patrick Beverly gets fully integrated, maybe that won't be the case, or those minutes at least are going to be spread a little bit thinner than before. But to me, it's not KJ McDaniels' viability. It's almost not just up to him. It's not just on his shoulders. It's going to be, you know, and I'm sure, or actually I know that you've talked about this on your podcast. It's also going to be up to James Harden to be, you know, a true point guard and to be you know, something approximating that Steve Nash guy who can, like, throw those types of lobs to a really athletic guy cutting from the corner three or you know, going for a dunk or just keeping...
Yeah.
James Harden's going to need to keep his eyes peeled and, you know, have a itchy trigger finger on passes.
Yeah, that's one thing I've been encouraged by this preseason. You know, you can see the chemistry between Harden and a lot of these guys. As we talked about earlier, he's having fun. But the question with Harden, and I'd say it's one of my biggest questions with the roster going into this year, is can he be efficient enough to truly be a, you know, the main distributor on a championship-level team? I don't get too bogged down in point guard versus shooting guard label, because even though Harden was technically the shooting guard the last couple of years, of course he was the point guard. He was the main ball handler. He had averaged seven and a half assists per game last year, which was sixth in the NBA. Anybody who says that Harden's selfish, I mean, that's just people who don't really watch the games and, you know, just see a bind here and there and are just looking for a reason to criticize. Harden's definitely a willing passer. The question is if he's efficient enough, because, you know, last year he led the league 4.5 turnovers per game. He's had a few turnover games where he's just been off charts high. Remember, he had 12 2 years ago in game 5 when the Warriors eliminated them in the Western Conference Finals. But the ultimate asterisk that you have to put on that stat and his excessive turnovers in Houston is that he has not had those secondary options. So defenses have been able to hedge and do things against him in a way that Stephen Curry in Golden State or Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City, especially Westbrook when he had KD with him, that just, you know, Harden saw different looks that those other elite perimeter guys never really saw. So the hope this year, it's certainly not a given, but the hope is that you have these options and he's going to be a more efficient player. And so you hope that people, you know, like Eric Gordon, but to a lesser extent, like KJ McDaniels, their ability to, you know, cut, do some off-script things, that's going to help Harden. You know, he's definitely going to have the assist to be a top-notch point guard, but to also reduce the turnovers.
Yeah, and you've talked on your show, especially recently, about who's going to start, Capella or Nene, and the reason why that is so important is because the primary action where defenders are going to hedge towards James Harden is going to be that pick and roll with you know, whoever the roll man, big man is on that given squad, and whoever can capitalize the most off of the, you know, gravity, I guess, is something that's been thrown around, but just the pressure that James Harden puts by having the ball in his hand on the defense, whichever big man or whoever big man is going to be able to be the most effective because of that trait, that's going to be really important to find out who that is. And it also, it makes me a little bit concerned for Atlanta, because Dennis Schroeder, if Dwight Howard and James Harden couldn't make it work, then, I mean, Dennis Schroeder's not quite James Harden. So that'll be interesting to watch. We'll see where Dwight Howard's career is going to go from here.
Yeah, I'm definitely a little worried about it too, because as I said, he's clearly still not a particularly willing pick and roll participant, which is the last part of his offensive game that is still good. You know, he wants those post touches, but now with both the back issue and the knee issue, his athleticism clearly isn't what it used to be. So I have some concerns. You know, he'll still be a good defensive player. I mean, he's strong as there is. He's got great instincts. But offensively, I mean, at times he becomes a net negative for you just because, you know, he doesn't really accept his ideal role. And one of the things that, you know, if you're looking for a reason why Houston could surprise this year, being around this team, they have a lot more guys this year that are willing to accept their role. Whereas last year, led by Dwight, there were a lot of guys that weren't necessarily doing that. As far as Capella and Nene, it's going to be really interesting to see where that goes. That's one of my, at the moment at least, pessimistic things. A lot of people have written, I would call the analytics community, there's a lot of people that are bullish on Clint Capella, and personally, I like him a lot. He's a great kid, works his butt off, does whatever the coaches tell him, but the free throw thing, I know it sounds rudimentary, but it is a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's huge.
He shot 37% last year. So far in the preseason, he's 0 of 8 right now as we take this podcast. And, you know, it's one of those things, I've asked the Rockets about it before. They're not really that worried about it because in his international play, when he went to the D-League 2 years ago, he got fouled like a bajillion times, and he shot 60% from the line. If you look at his form, it's not like watching Dwight Howard shoot a free throw. Clint Capella's form is actually pretty decent. He's got some touch, but for whatever reason, at the NBA level, he's a career 35% shooter. And if he's shooting 35%, then you can't give him the ball around the basket. And at times, you can't play him late in games because he's just going to get hacked, the same way they used to do with Dwight. So if that doesn't improve, I think they're going to be forced to start Nene just to keep the efficiency of the offense up. Because a Mike D'Antoni team, you know they're going to have to score a lot of points to win. That's just the way it is. But if you're a hacking guy that's a 35% shooter, that is a problem. Now, the Rockets aren't that worried about it. And personally, like, the logic side of my brain says that, yeah, eventually he's going to come around. There's a pretty big sample size in terms of his international play, his D-League play, of him being a 60% shooter, which is enough to deter the hacks, definitely. And I think what's going on in the NBA last year is basically his rookie season. Capella barely played in what was truly his rookie year, didn't get up to the Rockets until April. So I think maybe there's just a little bit of a mental funk to it. You know, he puts a little bit too much pressure on himself. But it's one of those things, you know, now he's 0 of 8 in the preseason. And until he makes some, that question is going to be there. So for right now, you know, I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt until I actually see it. You know, for right now, I'm going to say that, you know, when it's truly winning time, when the Rockets feel like they have to play well, when they put that winning lineup out there, I put Nene ahead of Capella just because, you know, you can trust Nene to go out there and shoot 70%+ from the line. And Capella's a ways away from that right now.
I get that. My secondary concern there is if you're pairing that with the idea that it is a mental thing, then just subbing him in the fourth quarter during dramatic times, like, that might, you know, be counterproductive, right?
Yeah.
Just, you know, being like, you're the starter, but not when it matters.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be, you know, picking and choosing. I don't think it would be every matchup, certainly. I just think certain situations, if it's an especially close game, I think it's something they would do. But I think the Rockets are very aware that the only way he's going to get out of that is through having actual repetitions and seeing that ball go in the rim. If you take him out of the situations to where he barely shoots free throws, then that mental funk is still going to be there. So it's a fine line to walk, certainly. You're right on there. To some extent, you're going to have to, you know, live and learn with him. And to go back to one of the things we said leading off this podcast, you know, they're more willing to experiment this year because while they should be a good team, they're not going to be a championship contending team. You know, unless Steph or KD gets hurt or something crazy like that. That with that level of experimentation, you should also see someone like Capella get a chance to work through his struggles. That's a fair point, and it's something that I would imagine that Mike D'Antoni is going to be trying to walk a very fine line with that.
I think what they need to do with Capella is get one of those. Have you heard about the Pistons, what they're doing with Drummond with the virtual reality?
I read about that. Yeah.
Okay, so what they need to do is get one of those for Capella, and in the fourth quarter, put it on Capella and make him be in a virtual reality where he is starting at center down the stretch.
Yeah.
That's the trick.
I like that. I like that for creative thinking, man.
You know, this is the type of thing that I'm excited to see D'Antoni coming in for this team, because that's the type of creative thinking that I think D'Antoni has always been about. You know, virtual reality and 7 seconds or less is, to me, you know, two leaves on the same tree.
and I'm just so excited to see it. Just as a basketball fan, you know, as a journalist, to finally get to see some innovation, because a lot of people were down on the D'Antoni hire when it was made in Houston, but they were down about it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
There were people that said, well, the Rockets were a bad defensive team last year, and they went out and hired a coach that's had mediocre, at best, defenses. Well, no, the issue with the Rockets last year was that they lacked engagement, period. They just happened to be a worse defensive team than an offensive team, because you know what? If you have a healthy James Harden, I don't care who you put him with, you're going to have a top 10 offense based on that alone, because Harden is that damn good.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think their offense was really that much more engaged or structured than the defense. It just so happened that the presence of Harden makes the offense offensive ranking look artificially high. What you needed with the Rockets was more of a structure. When you look at Kevin McHale and then especially J.B. Bickerstaff as an interim, those guys were players' coaches. They were ideal for coaching veterans and guys who could kind of police themselves, so to speak. And what ended up happening is that while the Rockets, that model worked for a while, once Dwight Howard's game kind of went over the hill, and once they had some unexpected regressions last year, you know, Ty Lawson did not work out at all, Corey Brewer had a terrible year, the Rockets were at a point, and then the Warriors just became off the charts good. The Warriors went from, you know, even though they won the title 2 years ago and did not this year, the Warriors were obviously an even better team this past season. Between the level of competition rising, some of the veterans getting worse, the Rockets clearly needed to retool. And when you look at coaches like Kevin McHale or J.B. Bickerstaff, those are great for veteran teams that know who they are and have an identity. And what the Rockets needed last year, what they found, they needed an identity. They needed a system. And so Mike D'Antoni is, in some ways, the complete opposite of that. Even though he's an offensive-minded coach, there is a very clear system. He is willing to experiment with all these types of players and all these types of concepts. You know, we were joking about the virtual reality and that kind of stuff. And that, to me, is what they need, because the Rockets are no longer at a place where, you know what, you've got James Harden and Dwight Howard in their prime, and so you've got the talent to be a contender, and so you just kind of got to stay out of their way and let them go do their thing. You know, no, the competition is better. The roster is a little more unproven. So what you need is, you know, more of a structured system, more of a willingness to an experiment, more actual hands-on coaching. To me, yeah, the people that criticized him missed the mark, because the problem with the Rockets wasn't just that they didn't care about defense. The problem was that they didn't care, period. And yeah, hopefully a hands-on coach like D'Antoni is a step in the right direction towards getting that, you know, the structure back that they need.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a few ways you can go about the task of making players care again. But I think that whether you're going to be like Thibodeau and stress the defense, or you're going to be like D'Antoni and stress the offense, either way, if you start winning games, that's going to motivate everyone collectively. And, you know, I don't think I could have put it better than you did right there before when you were talking about just the way that the tide has risen as far as elite teams in the NBA right now. Because, you know, for the Houston Rockets fans that want their team to be, you know, able to contend with the Warriors, it might happen, but it's not going to happen by going mano a mano. You need to come from a different perspective. You know, the game last year in the Western Conference, I think semis, with the Blazers against the Warriors, I was watching an interview with Terry Stotts, and the interviewee was like, how are you going to beat this Warriors team? Just sort of joking, like, you know, they're so much better than you. And Terry Stotts said, well, we're going to score more points than them. And he was being totally serious, and they dropped 130 on the Warriors that game, and that was the only game they won. That's basically what the Rockets are going to do once they make it to the playoffs next year, like, is try to be acceptable on defense. But if it just so happens that Ryan Anderson hits, you know, 50% of his threes in any given game, it's going to be okay that he's giving up, like, 60% at the rim, because three-pointers cost more and they're better, you know? So I just feel like that strategy, sure, you're not going to be able to raise your talent level up to the level of the Warriors, but on any given night, the Rockets could field an offense that's better than the Warriors, you know, could.
Yeah.
And that could help them win, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the level of competition around the NBA, it's so high, but in a way it gives you opportunities. In a way it can make it more fun, because you have to be more willing to experiment.
Right.
You have to, you know, when you have these athletic freaks of nature like Cajun McDaniels, even if he can't shoot and he doesn't fit in the prototype, although the Rockets swear to me that he's actually been shooting threes pretty well in camp, so we'll see. So far I think he's like 2 of 5, which is, you know, 40%, tiny sample, but, you know, we'll see. But the point is, yeah, it makes it more fun because you have to try things in non-traditional ways. And the other thing that's interesting for the Rockets, obviously Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, a big part of why they chose to sign in Houston was the presence of James Harden. I heard a lot of Rockets fans that were pretty depressed after the Durant to Golden State thing because the bar is so high. Actually, long term, if this works out, I think it can be at least somewhat of a positive for the Rockets, because the thing is, if you want to compete with the Warriors and Cavaliers, the bar is so high. If you're another elite NBA player, you have to team up with one of these top tier guys, which James Harden clearly is. And you know what? If Harden has a bounce back year in the sphere of public opinion, and especially if Mike D'Antoni has this offense that, you know, puts up a ton of points and everyone raves about how fun it is to play and how fun it is to watch, then all of a sudden it's not hard at all to see the Rockets being a, you know, destination in 2017 and 2018 free agency. As, you know, hey, if you're, you know, an all-star level player and you're a free agent, then teaming up with James Harden, that might be the one way that you can actually contend and compete with the likes of the Warriors and Cavs. So, you know, for some NBA cities, it's definitely worse, because if you don't have a star at all, I mean, man, that mountain seems pretty huge. But with the mountain being that high, if you're a team like Houston that has James Harden in place, that gives you a leg up, because you go into a future free agency and, you know, the appeal of playing with someone like James Harden, to me, it's a lot stronger now, just because if you want to contend, there aren't many routes that you can take to get there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if Vine didn't exist, everyone would know that James Harden was, you know, the second or first best player in the league. You know, well, okay. He's like top three, top four. I mean, he's incredible. Yeah. And I've tweeted it before, like, there's no universe where Russell Westbrook is as good as James Harden. And, like, that's just a reality. In terms of, like, efficiency, I mean, also, like, you're like, oh, but Russell Westbrook's such a good rebounder. Like, James Harden's a really good rebounder, too. And a lot of Russell Westbrook's assists I don't really like. You know, I think that at least James Harden's assists are good, effective, created offense. But, you know, if I can sit down and say James Harden is better than Russell Westbrook, that means that he is so clearly in that superstar echelon that, yeah, I think you're right. And I think it will be really important for him to, you know, improve his, I don't know, he should get a campaign manager or something.
Yeah.
And exactly. Not Trump's.
No, God, no. But his perception, I know what you mean. It's a big deal, because narrative shape it. It's unfortunate because, you know, we live in a society where these six-second binds, you know, they do generate so much traction. Attention spans are so short. It's a combination of that and with kind of the quarterback syndrome is what I call it. No matter what happens, you know, the quarterback takes the blame, and the Rockets, they underachieved last year. You know, you can't really blame Dwight Howard, because obviously, you know, he's not really the star of the team anymore. James Harden's the star of the team, and whether it's fair or not, he's going to take the blame. And the good news, though, is that the bar was set so low. People are realizing it was ridiculous now, but, you know, the over-under win totals, you know, even as recently as a month or so ago, had the Rockets at, like, 41.5, which is way too low. But, you know, with the bar being that low, you can kind of have the team overachieve, which is what they did 2 years ago when, you know, he was runner-up in the media MVP and won the players MVP, because he took a team that, you know, a lot of people forecast as like a 6 or 7 seed, and they won the division and were a 2 seed and went to the Western Conference Finals. So, yeah, I think it's a big deal to, you know, hopefully let Harden take advantage of the lower expectations, go out and have a good year. It's potentially a good redemption tour for both Harden and Mike D'Antoni, and if they succeed, then I could see Houston in 2017 free agency having one of the more attractive narratives of the teams with cap room. Because, you know now Golden State and Cleveland are not going to have max cap room. Let's be real there. Golden State used their shot. Now they got to get, Steph a new deal. But when you look at teams that are not Golden State or Cleveland, Houston, if all goes well, let's say they stay healthy, Harden has the kind of year that we've talked about over the last close to an hour on this podcast. If all things go right and they win 50 games and, you know, at least make playoffs, if not advance to the second round, something like that, then Houston's going to be a really compelling narrative for the elite free agents next summer. They're going to be one of the more attractive situations. So, yeah, you're right. The PR campaign is a big part of how, you know, they wanted to lure Kevin Durant or Al Horford this summer. It didn't happen, and I think, you know, the narrative was part of the reason. But you know what? Now you can you know, turn the narrative the other way. Just got to have the right campaign manager. And as you said, not Donald Trump's, anyone but that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it'll also be important, and counting stats, you know, they're counting stats, but if James Harden averages 10 assists, I mean, how are you going to be able to say, oh, he's selfish, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess people still sort of said that about Westbrook, but yeah, no, we covered everything I wanted to, so.
Yeah, I think we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the Rockets for next year. If, you know, you're listening to this on Locked On Rockets, then, you know, first of all, keep listening to Locked On Rockets. Ben is doing awesome. And also go listen to Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast, and check out the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And, you know, I've covered the Rockets a fair deal this offseason because of all the interesting things they've been doing. And, you know, I have mostly positive things to say about your team, so.
Again, that was Chris Axman. Thought that was a really enjoyable segment. Have been wanting to talk to him for a while because, as I said leading off, he had a great feature on his site, Almighty Baller, called KJ McDaniels, a Draymond in the Rough. Really caught my attention back in August because he makes a pretty strong case for why KJ McDaniels can be not just a rotation player, but a really good player with his skill set. And so I wanted to get him on. Obviously talked a lot about KJ, but he does a great job covering the NBA as a whole. So I hope you guys appreciated the crossover episode with some of his takes on the Rockets and the league as a whole. Hope you learned a lot. And again, Chris Axman, you can follow him on Twitter at Almighty Baller. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up. We got a lot to look forward to the rest of the week. Tomorrow, Wednesday morning, Rockets play in China against the Pelicans. I'll have a post-game recap for you later in the day on Wednesday. And then after that, the Rockets get on the 15-plus hour flight back home to Houston, finally. They've been gone for over a week now. They'll get back on Thursday, take a day to readjust their bodies. I'm sure, believe Friday, they'll have a practice. And then Saturday night at home against the Memphis Grizzlies, that's the final preseason home game of the year. And if you want to go, want to throw another closing shout out to our friends at SeatGeek. They're the ones who brought to you today's Locked On Rockets episode. You can download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets gets you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. And you can get some really good deals on preseason tickets, see a lot of really young players like KJ McDaniels get a lot of playing time. And with Saturday night being the last home preseason game, it's a weekend. Why don't get out to Toyota Center? Let's have a good crowd. Let's welcome the Rockets home. And you know what? Let's keep the undefeated record going as long as they can. So with that, this is where I'll sign off. I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. You can always follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And you can email the show at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions for me, or if you want information on how you can become a sponsor, just like today's sponsor, SeatGeek. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I will catch up with you after the Pelicans game on Wednesday.